Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
The NFL season is in full swing. You might not be at the game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. There's also some interesting prop bets on BetOnline that you can check out. One that popped up to me is Cleveland's next baseball mascot name, because of course they got rid of the racist name they were using. The favorite right now is the Spiders at plus 250, followed by the Cleveland baseball team at plus 500. But my favorite is all the way down at plus 1200, and it's the Buckeyes. Of course, that's the Ohio State Buckeyes college sports team name, but it was also the Negro League team name in Cleveland back in the 40s. So I'm going with the Buckeyes at plus 1200. But from game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than any place online. And there's always the online casino as well. It never closes. So head to betonline.ag today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Again, that's betonline.ag and sign up today. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another version of Bill Roden on Sports Rose Pod. I'm here upstate, undisclosed location, holding out, you know, but enjoying the solitude. And here with my co-host, the great Jamal Murphy, holding down in Brooklyn. Murph, what's happening?
What's up, Bill? Everything's great here in Brooklyn. Nice, cold, sunny day. Can't complain.
Yeah. We're here. You know, this is really this is spectacular. We have a really wonderful guest, a great friend, you know, great human being. He's got a lot on the plate. In fact, just before we got in the line, I was listening to a program we did with our guest in July of 2016, and a lot has happened since then. Anyway, about the great Crystal McQuarrie McGuire. She's an author. She's a producer. She's now a player agent. She's a she's a mother. She's the wife of perhaps New York's next mayor. I mean, and she's probably one of the most, I was thinking, but probably one of the most incredible human beings I know, just in terms of the brains and just the creativity, the drive, just a whole lot of stuff. Anyway, Crystal, welcome once again to the show. So glad to have you.
Thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be here. And I'm just curious, how come you get to be in an undisclosed location, Bill, but Jamal, you shouted him out as being in Brooklyn?
I know.
Are you in hiding?
I sold him out immediately. I thought when I said, see, Crystal, she's also an attorney, so she peeped out immediately. I said, well, maybe I could slide. No, you forget who you got on the line. Why do I get to be in hiding and I tell everybody where Jamal is?
I know. What's up with that?
Brooklyn's a big borough, so it's okay.
Okay. You know, I guess I'm undisclosed, but at least he narrowed it down.
I'm upstate New York. Well, you know, I'm, you know, like Moses now in the wilderness. I'm sort of, you know, anyway, no, it's just sort of what we, it's our inside thing. Well, I was at an undisclosed location, though, I must say, in these times when you got the Proud Boys and
true,
everything.
True.
So, you know, I was going to put a Biden-Harris thing on my car. I said, you know, I better not.
You can't
nuts,
do that.
You know? Yeah, not up there.
No, you can't. Scary times.
Huh? Yeah.
Scary times.
It's deep. And I guess I want to get into that because you are, you know, you're it's one thing to say, you know, Crystal, we're all political in a way. But now you're like in the middle. I mean, you're like in the midst of it, a mayoral campaign.
Yes.
So I like to say, but I want to start off with your son. I want to start off talking about your child, you know, Cole, the one, and you got three of them. You got Cole,
yes.
Ella, and Leo. But each will wait their turn. We're going to talk to your oldest child. You know, what's it been like? Let's take us back. This short history from draft day to now. What's it been like? Cole is with the Orlando Magic. He's he's launching his professional career. What's it been like?
Well, it has been a dream come true for Cole, but it has been harrowing because, as you all know, he was injured his freshman year at UNC, and he came out of the surgery, and we didn't know what was going to happen. So it's been a lot of up and down since that time, and until draft day, I truly did not know. I did not know where he was going to go. and so just the uncertainty of it with your own child, it made it, it made it stressful, to be quite honest. I mean, notwithstanding the fact that he was on the verge of a dream coming true to even be able to be drafted into the NBA, this was a year unlike any other for the NBA. I mean, right. The shortened season, the draft had been postponed originally from June, then to October, then from October to November. Teams weren't sure if they were going to keep their picks. Teams were, teams that were interested in him, it was unclear even draft day if they'd have their pick by the time it came around to when he was, potentially projected to go. So there was just so much, up in the air. And, when his name finally was called by the Orlando Magic, we were just overjoyed, and especially Cole, because actually the Orlando Magic were Cole's number one choice of the teams. Really? Yeah, of the teams that we knew were interested in him, that was his number one choice.
And he had a relationship with some of those guys, right? He had, like, Mo Bamba. Was he friends with Mo?
Yeah, Mo Bamba is one of his best friends.
Yeah.
And Mo and Cole played for the same AAU team, the PSA Cardinals. And so they were, when Cole was a freshman, Mo was a junior, and they actually played in like the championship for the AAU circuit against Trae Young, interestingly enough.
Oh, wow.
When he played for the MoCan Elite with Michael Porter Jr.
Wow.
And so, in any event, yeah, he was so excited to be reunited with Mo, because they were, super close when they played ball together and just remained friends. And actually, the night that Mo Bamba was drafted a couple years ago, he was actually staying at our place for the week of the draft, leading up to the draft. And so it just felt really full circle. And then for them now to both be on the same team, they were both thrilled. But like Mo called him like 5-6 times the day of the draft, and he was like, okay, Cole, the draft is 7 hours from now. Okay. 4 more hours. Draft's gonna start in an hour. Oh, draft has started, Cole.
Yeah, right. What did you guys? What were your projections? What was the range that you were hearing?
Well, by the time, it's interesting. It lets you know how much so many of these people doing these mock drafts just do not know what they're talking about.
Right.
And so. What we heard internally through his agent, which, by the way, I am not an agent. I could never be an agent. Bill, you calling me an agent. I'm not. His agent is a man by the name of Jeff Schwartz.
Oh, yeah.
XL Sports.
Oh, XL, yes.
Yes. That's right. Down in, well, they have offices. They have them in New York and Florida. But Jeff was absolutely fantastic, as well as the entire XL Sports team, including the sister, Naila Waterfield, who does all the marketing and PR for Cole. But in any event, from our side, it kept sort of changing, but it was always higher than what the later mock drafts were saying that kept coming out, right? And so the 15 for the Orlando Magic was really the sweet spot for Cole. That was right in the sweet spot of the projections. And as I said, Cole's number one choice.
Great. Let me ask you, because we all know, you know, the trials and tribulations that Cole went through, you know, the injury, North Carolina not really being able to play a full season there like everybody had projected. And then, you know, not, you know, his stock kind of dropping. But I'm wondering, you know, having never been in that position, you know, once you're in, you know, you're going through the draft, and his name is called, does that just wipe everything away? Does that just make everything better?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, it was such a relief when his name was called. As you saw, if you remember the footage of him draft night and just the floodgate of tears come out, I mean, it was joy, but I think also relief, because the uncertainty was over, you know, and it's like the beautiful part and the horrible part of sports. The beautiful part, it's wonderful that you can do what you love to do professionally and what you would do for free, what he was doing for free anyway. And so nobody's going to feel bad, you know, for him, nor should they. But at the same time, in this world that we live in, this world of social media, where everyone is, you know, charting your every move, and you have your, you know, wonderful, zealous sports fans, you know, we had the distinct pleasure of for several months seeing on social media, you know, Cole get trashed in a, you know, from here to, but again, no one's gonna feel bad for you. Like, you know, it's good. It's all part of it. You know, he just focused on the positive. And so, you know, was it all washed away when they finally called his name? Sure, because he gets to live his dream. And for him, the most important thing was to go to the team that was the right situation for him and to be able to develop. And so that's how, you know, he views the Orlando Magic. I mean, a world-class organization there with some, you know, incredibly talented players. I mean, look, every NBA player is talented. So, but just a great fit, though, for him to have the opportunity to play and learn from, you know, a young point guard like Markelle Fultz, who's been in the league a couple of years under his belt. And I think that they, you know, complement each other. Even Michael Carter Williams, who won Rookie of the Year a few years back, Cole can learn a lot from him and all the players. And so, it's you know, washed away. You know, Cole's wanted to play in the NBA his entire life, and so he's, you know, blessed enough to have had the opportunity to hear his name called by Adam Silver on draft night, and now, you know, he's living the dream.
What have the reports been back, you know, from, you know, it's like all of us, we have our children, and they get their first gigs out of college, you know, and you kind of want to know how's it going and all the little dynamics, you know. What have the reports been like, you know, from Orlando?
Wow. I mean, well, it's really kind of cute, and it's gratifying as a parent. On one hand, you miss your child when they move away from home. You know, I took him to the airport when he was going down to Orlando the second time, like the day after the draft, he flew down to Orlando and I went with him to just, you know, look for places for him to live. Then he came back home for Thanksgiving. And then when it came down for him, time for him to go back down to Orlando for good, I took him to the airport, and I was standing outside the airport with him, hugging him. And I said, "Okay, honey," it's like, "have a great trip." And he said, and he looked at me, he's like, "Trip? This ain't no trip." He goes, "I'm moving. Bye." And so that, you know, that hurt a little, but at the same time, I was like, wow, you really are, you know, moving. I don't have to worry about, you know, your room being dirty and finding, you know, week old food under your bed. So that was a good feeling from that perspective. But on the other hand, it's kind of sad, but it's, they're still, you know, he's just, you know, just turned 20 this year. He's still a kid. So it was kind of cute, because the place that he found to rent when it came time. It was on the weekend when he had to, you know, close the deal, you know, or sign the lease or whatever for it. So they couldn't do like a wire or anything that weekend. And so he called me. He's like, got checks for the first time. He's like, did you put my new checks in my backpack before I was leaving? I was like, yeah. And then he was like, well, I don't know how to write a check. Because that, you know, the kids this day, I mean, everything's Venmo, PayPal.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I barely know how to write a check anymore.
Right. Well, that's the thing people do. But he goes, but they'll take a check over the weekend, but they're not wiring during the weekend through my account. So I happen to have copies of his check here too. Like he had some. So I was like, okay, cool. Let me do, you know, tell me who it's to be paid. So I like wrote the check here, took a shot of it. And I was like, now just copy this on the right. checks you have done. So, I mean, just it's things like that. I mean, he's on one hand, you know, he's a grown man, working man. But at the same time, there are those things, you know, like that. Like, don't forget to have the electricity put in your name. I mean, just things right. that, you know, growing up stuff. But it's, you know, again, it's gratifying. I think just the biggest part is, you know, we all as parents want our children to do something in life that they are passionate about. And so the fact that he can have a career doing something that he loves more than anything in the world is incredible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, like, just for you, how you felt about all this, because you're right. He's getting to do something that he loves, that he really wants to do. Few people get that opportunity, you know, to do that professionally. But he's had this dream, you know, since I don't know how old, probably like 5 or 6 or something like that. And you've been trying to facilitate, you know, him, you know, help him get to that point for all these years. So I just wonder how it felt for you, because it's not just the normal kid getting a job. I mean, you know, you did the Tiny Ballers film, which was when he was what, in 5th or 6th grade or something like that. So this has been a journey for you for his whole life. So I'm just curious, like, what were your feelings when he finally got drafted?
You know, I don't want to sound cliche, but it really felt like a dream. And for a full couple weeks, it was just surreal, because there has been so much work through the years for the past, you know, 15 years of him grinding as a player and me as a parent, along with Ray, my husband, and just the whole community that supported Cole and his teammates from team to team, from AAU road trip to road trip, you know, taking a bus down, not a bus, but a van packed with like 30 kids down to Kentucky, and, you know, staying in, you know, motels, 6 kids in a room, and, you know, just really going through, you know, because Cole was an emotional player when he was younger, going through the emotions, going through the wins, the losses, and just the hard work, you know, going to different schools and different AAU programs to finally see him make it to the NBA. It was just, and still is on a certain level, surreal. It's like, is this real? Because like I know how hard he has grinded. I know what his work ethic has been and continues to be. And so I really, you know, saw the sweat and the work up close for, you know, years. And so for him to, you know, finally be at this point, it just, you know, I can't state it enough. It really is a unreal feeling, because then you get to the other side of it and you kind of exhale for a minute and you're like, wow, he's really here. And it, and I guess what it does on another thing sort of emotionally is, it almost vanishes all those years of hard work where there was a lot of struggle because of the wins and losses and injuries and disappointments and so on and so forth. And you're on the other side of that and you exhale and you're like, wow, like you know, you did it. We did it. This is something special.
Yeah. You know, again, one of the things that one of the DVDs is at the top of my watch list is Little Ballers. I keep it at the top of my my DVD thing, and why? Because it really is quite phenomenal. I mean, it's phenomenal. It was great when it came out. You know, you're like, yeah, it's fine. You know, it's a great piece of work, and you were so fortunate.
Thank you.
And now, but to look, I mean, you kind of hit it. And I think every time I talk to you, I said, Crystal, you gotta, because I know when it came, you're talking, why do you were going to kind of franchise it and do this and do this. Well, but now you've got this real legitimate progression. I mean, you know, you go from these kids when they were sixth grade and the tournament. And then, you know, there's just so much. So I'm actually going to probably watch it again this weekend because it's really quite phenomenal. What was it like when he got injured? You know, because again, you know, you say he was emotional. There was some very funny stuff in there about how, you know, they were telling him, oh, yeah, watch his emotions and all that kind of stuff. But so he goes to North Carolina. And I think when you were on our show, the Post had that story about him being the top freshman at the time. But what was it like when he got injured at Carolina? Because now that's another thing that everybody's got to deal with. You know, you keep thinking about, remember that number? I don't know what the number was in Little Ball. It's an incredible number. How many kids play high school? How many of those kids play college?
Right. Oh, yeah. No, I remember that. Yep. It was something like 9-10 million high school kids play basketball. 2,000 or so get Division I scholarships to play in college. 60 get drafted. 30 make the team.
Yeah. I mean, it's so.
And that doesn't even factor in the international players now, because there's so many fantastic international players that the NBA has. I mean, it's a global game now. So you're not just competing on the U.S. stage, but you're competing on the global stage. Like in this year's draft, they have an Israeli player, Denny Avija. There are a couple of French players with Killian Hayes and Theo Maledon. There's some African players. And I'm sure there are others that I'm not remembering right at this moment. But, yeah, the odds are against you.
Yeah. So what was it like? And, again, part of being those odds is when you deal with these certain milestones, you know, like the injury.
Sure.
You know, the so many things that happened. What was that like? How did you guys deal with that? The emotions and the rehab.
Right. Yeah. I mean, so for Cole, I'll back up for a second. So Cole started off, you know, his UNC year, you know, broke the record, scoring record of a freshman in a game. And, you know, the next few games were, you know, pretty good. He got a double-double in the next game, doing, putting in work. And then it's so interesting. You just think about like what happens to kids when they go off to college, but he then gets to campus. Like, you know, they say for freshmen in college, it's like they're going to preschool. It's like a Petri dish because everybody gets sick. So like a couple weeks into the season starting, he like has a flu. Then they go to Atlantis, battling Atlantis down there. And I believe in the battling Atlantis was where he actually tore his meniscus. And I believe he tore his meniscus in the Oregon game down there, which was the third and final game down there. He comes back. He's sore, but they think it's just like tendonitis or something. Has the flu. Hadn't eaten in a couple days. Knee sore. And then he had to play. He played the Virginia game and the Ohio State game, I believe it was, with a torn meniscus. Again, hadn't been diagnosed as that yet, and the flu. again, but nobody's going to feel bad for him, and nobody cares about that. Only person who cares about that is mama.
Right.
That's it. And I'm fine with it. After either it was the Ohio State or Virginia game, at that game, he was like, I'm still not feeling right in my knee. Goes and gets, you know, x-ray. X-ray is negative. Goes and gets the MRI. MRI is like, and I think it was Coach Williams who called me. I don't even think it was Cole who called me and told me first. But Coach Williams called me, and he's on the phone with me crying. And then I start crying because he was like, Cole started crying when we were talking about it, just cried his eyes out. And then at that point, we get the tears out. And as mothers do, then we go into action mode. And I'm like, okay, let me get copies of the MRI. Let me, you know, let's figure out what we're going to do, when we're going to get the surgery. You know, I send it to, along with Ray, because, you know, we have some orthopedic surgeon friends here in New York City. We sent it to get several opinions. Everybody look at it. Went all the doctors down at UNC, they looked at it, and, you know, we just went to action mode. And I think he had, and then I was like on the plane, I think the next day, and he had surgery, you know, within a few days of the, you know, prognosis, and then went into rehab the day after surgery. They get, because it's a, you know, outpatient, but it was tough. I mean, but I felt, and I know Cole felt in that moment, that first day of rehab, that this is my road to recovery.
Right.
You know, this is my road to recovery. And he was undeterred. And there were a lot of people saying, don't go back. Don't play anymore. Don't get, you know, just rehab. Do not go back. Don't risk re-injuring and just, you know, sit out the rest of the season, you know. And he was like, absolutely not. If I'm better and I'm able to go play, I'm going to go play. I don't care what our record is. I'm going to go and just try to help my team. I don't care if my stock takes a hit. This is about, you know, so that was, that's how he approached it. And so everything happens for a reason. And again, Orlando with the 15th pick, had he sat out, he might've gone higher, but he wouldn't have been in the place he wanted to be. So,
Right. Heaven forbid, like the Knicks were involved. That was like probably the best thing that came out that he wasn't there.
No comment.
What'd you say?
No, so thank God. Well, yeah, I was killing the Knicks. That's become such a gratuitous joke now. Well, thank God he didn't come to the Knicks, you know.
No comment. I love our hometown team. I love the Knicks and I love the Brooklyn Nets. No comment.
There you go. Right. And love Kyrie.
Yes.
Love Kyrie. And look, and Obi, and then by the way, Obi Toppin, I'm not sure I'm pronouncing his name right. Obi, who they got, he's an extraordinary player.
Right.
I date in Flyers, where my husband Ray is from, and great kid and super talented young man. He's a hometown kid too. And you know, we wish them nothing but the best. Nick's got a great pick in Obi.
Before we get into your husband Ray, one last question about Cole. So now he's a pro, and now, you know, so now he steps into the NBA in an interesting time, you know, to say the least. You got, you know, they're playing during a pandemic. Even colleges are playing during a pandemic, so I guess there's no difference there. But you also have the NBA activism, the WNBA activism. You know, as a politically astute parent, and your son is jumping in that mix. I just wonder what a justice warrior
she calls herself.
A social justice warrior.
Social justice warrior. Yes.
Social justice warrior.
That is me.
What's your take on this particular time and that Cole stepping into the league where the NBA is such a big player in social justice and amidst a pandemic?
I think it's a really exciting time for him to be a young player playing for, you know, in the National Basketball Association, to have a platform like the NBA that has been, by the way, incredibly supportive every step of the way around issues relating to social justice and police accountability and the right to vote. And they've been incredibly outspoken around criminal justice reform. And so to, you know, be living at a time when we know a couple decades ago, and I guess depending upon the sport, also that it has not been historically encouraged for athletes to speak out. I mean, we saw some folks trying to silence LeBron James, you know, with I won't name her name either, but the person telling him to shut up and dribble. And I loved it. LeBron was like, who said that? I have no idea who that is. And then they went and made a documentary about it. So that's right. Keep on fueling our flames on that. And I'm deeply encouraged that the players have the platform that they have with the support of the NBA to use it to, you know, use it for people who don't have the same megaphone that the players do. That's incredibly important, you know, particularly in the era that we're living in. I mean, you know, just issues around voter suppression and, you know, voter registration and just, you know, voter disenfranchisement across the board. I mean, the work that the NBA has done, and LeBron James in particular, with is it More Than a Vote that he created? Yeah. Is it More Than a Vote? More Than a Vote. And him partnering, I mean, just getting people registered to vote, getting people transportation to vote, helping to educate people. I mean, that has been tremendous. And so I'm thrilled that Cole is going into a league that is so socially conscious on the right side of history, as far as I'm concerned.
Our guest is the wonderful Crystal McCrary McGuire. We're going to talk about the other part of her life. Her husband, Ray McGuire, is running for mayor of New York City, probably one of the toughest jobs in history. I'm saying, wow, you know, Crystal goes from the skillet to the frying pan, you know. maybe the only thing tougher than being running for mayor, becoming mayor, is going from AAU to the NBA. You know, So Crystal, again, I was thinking of this morning, I said, man, this is probably one of the most incredible human beings I know. Tell me about that. Your husband, Ray McGuire, who you know, I know is great. What went into that decision to, knowing everything you know about public life, and you've been through it, and he does too, what went into that decision to run for mayor of New York?
Well, first of all, I mean, I knew more about public life, I think, than Ray. I mean, Ray was a pretty private guy. He did a lot of work that has affected the lives of New Yorkers, but he did it from behind the scenes. I mean, he never had a social media account, no Twitter, no IG. He was behind the scenes helping to make the lives of New Yorkers better from an educational front, a cultural front, a health front, but, you know, was not seeking attention or congratulations or any kind of accolades for it. But in terms of the decision to, you know, run for public office, it's multiple fold. And I think it starts with, you know, it's interesting because now, you know, being the wife of a political candidate for, you know, a pretty big job, and people ask you, why did he run? What made he do that? The answers are pretty basic and foundational. I would say first and foremost, he deeply, deeply cares about New York City. And he sees the city suffering on multiple fronts. he sees a city that is deeply divided. It's a microcosm in New York City of what we see on the national stage, the divisiveness. Throughout the five boroughs, it is very divided. I mean, it's divided among Democrats. There Right. is a range of what Democrats believe. And he is a Democrat, and he's running as a Democrat. But, you know, so in addition to seeing that, we're looking at how New York City has been impacted by the pandemic. And we're in a city where it's $9, $10 billion in a deficit. You got, you know, 500,000 or so small businesses that have shut down. And what the pandemic has exposed is Black and brown communities have been disproportionately affected by the injustices and the health crisis and the housing insecurity that has been created or amplified, shall I say, because of the pandemic. And so why him? And so he is somebody who has always, again, he has served from being on, you know, a wide array of boards, from chairing the Studio Museum in Harlem board to building schools, to the De La Salle Academy, to the New York Presbyterian Hospital, to the NBA Players Association, Think 450 board. And there are several others that have demonstrated his interest in giving back and leadership. And right now, New York City, when he looked across the spectrum or the landscape, shall I say, of mayoral candidates, from his vantage point and also from the polling, not any of the candidates that were running were polling outside of single digits. And many of them have been running for decades, years.
Right.
And you're looking at, well, what's it going to take for New York City to really come out of this? You're going to need somebody with financial acumen. You're going to need somebody who has credibility, somebody that is respected, someone who can bridge the divide, who has range, you know, from the suites, from the streets to the suites, from the basement of the churches to the boardroom, and someone who can manage and lead. And unify. And so Ray checks all those boxes and others, and somebody who, you know, has integrity. And so, you know, I'd be lying if I didn't say through the years, people have said, Ray, you know, you should run for mayor. People from different parts of, and that's because they're, you know, people who have either worked with him, been on boards with him, been on the receiving end of him taking an interest in their organization, in their professional career, in their charity, in their business. He is a guy who at every turn has tried to make the life of others better. I mean, he really does live by, I know I'm gonna mess up this quote, but the sentiment of the late great Congressman John Lewis, who, you know, said, if I haven't made this earth a better place during my time here, then it was all a waste, you know, and Ray lives by that.
Mm-hmm. Well, his father was a minister, right? His father, I don't know if I got that story right or wrong.
No, that's okay. No. So Ray never knew his father, actually. He was raised by a single mom and his grandparents, his maternal grandparents. His grandfather, Leo, who our son Leo was named after, was a minister.
That's it. Okay.
Yep. And he was, and Ray was raised in the church. I mean, like he gonna cite you some scripture. and that is what he, again, like for Ray, relationships, friendship, business, personal, they're biblical to him. You know, you do right by people.
We're looking forward to that. I think we're looking forward to have Ray on the show and Cole. We like to have like a whole family.
Oh, family.
Yeah, Cole, Ray, you know.
Well, anytime. Yeah. Let us let us know. You know, it's you know, we're in a very interesting place, though, Bill. You know, Jamal, you talked about social justice with the NBA, and I just want to say one other thing on this front as it relates to politics and as it relates to platforms. Right now in the national zeitgeist, social justice is on the tip of the tongues of everybody. I mean, everybody's as it should be on the national level and on a local level, right? Social justice as it relates to policing reform, housing reform, et cetera. But I'll tell you what is really important to us also, or should be important to others, is as a people, Black and brown folks, we're not gonna have any social justice without economic justice.
Right.
But exactly. We just not. And one of the last things Ray did before he left Citi was he spearheaded this report called The Economic Cost of Racial Inequality in America. And the key finding of that is racial inequality has cost the American economy $16 trillion over the last 20 years. Mm. So when we're talking about equity, economic equity for our folks, it's not like we're only talking about it because we deserve it and we should have it, but it also affects the bottom line for the whole U.S. economy.
Right.
Yeah.
And you look at a place like New York City, which is just disgraceful and stunning to me, that in 2020, you got less than 3% of New York City contracts that go to Black and brown businesses. Less than 3%. What are we doing, people? Yeah. Well, like, that's like, what happened to, we need another Maynard Jackson mayor, who when he was the mayor of Atlanta, he made sure as Atlanta Hartsfield Airport was being built, that at least 20% of the contracts for the building of that airport were going to go to Black businesses.
Right.
You know, and here we are sitting, you know, we fighting for some crumbs when we need to be thinking about how we're going to own the bakery.
Exactly. Exactly. And the irony of New York is that from the outside, people are saying, right, particularly people on the right, are talking about how liberal and left. So I said, yeah, but when you look at those numbers and you say, wait a minute, let's get to power and control, you know, you find out that Black folks, you know, you have a tiny
fraction,
right? But
less than 3%, Bill, and we are over 30% of New York City's population. I'll give you one better, and I'm not gonna name no names, but there's somebody running for mayor right now who was in the de Blasio administration and was the head of the MWBE, Minority Women Business Enterprises. And under that person's being the head of it, not one Black business got a contract with the city. Not one. Some white women under MWBE got contracts with the city, but not one Black business. And these are our own people.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you got it. Well, You shouldn't say her name, but you should tell me who it is so I can say her name.
Yeah, off the record.
Off the record.
Oh, I'll tell you off the record. We can talk. But you know, this is what I got to say.
But you know what, you know, Crystal.
This is the thing.
You need to know these people, though. You need to know if these people are running for public office, you need to know who these people are and what they have not done.
Right. Well, people do know, but I'm a keep my mouth quiet and take the high road on that. But what I will say in this moment also to that point is I think about one of my favorite Martin Luther King quotes that I'm a butcher again, too. So please forgive me. But you think about the work that Martin Luther King Jr. was doing in his latter years with the Poor People's Campaign. And he said, you know, what good does it do me if I can sit at this countertop, but I can't afford to buy a sandwich?
Right. Exactly. 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 Yeah, no, it's amazing. Let me ask you, Chris, before we let you go, because you got 99 things you got to do. You know, you're not the agent, but You know, you got to supervise all this stuff. You know, you're not the campaign director, but you got to supervise all this stuff. You know, I do. That's in your DNA. But what is going to be your role in the campaign? I mean, you know, you can't. What's campaigning like in just a couple of, what's campaigning like in the context of coronavirus, and what impact has the national presidential election and the outcome had on this campaign?
Wow, that's a big question. But first of all, a lot more Zoom meetings. That's how the pandemic has affected this. A whole lot of Zoom meet and greets. You know, Ray right. has not been able to go and do as many in person. I mean, he's had some social distance in person things he's gone to, but in terms of like he can't go touching everybody's hands in a church like right. He would have done if we weren't in this moment. So that's impacted it. But he's been able to get out and, have a lot of touches to all of the communities. And we've been on the ground. I mean, we have been on the ground. I mean, we work with a lot of organizations, community organizations, in the Bronx and Queens and Bed-Stuy. So we've still been able to get out and hear what's important to the folks in the community. How is the national election affected, and I assume you mean with the election.
Well, yeah, that was a big question I asked you. I mean, that was too general, but I guess the mood, the tone, there was so much distrust of the political process. There's so much mm-hmm. animosity. There's so much anxiety. There's so much tension. There's so much polarity. And mm-hmm. I guess the question is, when you're running for the mayor, how do you usually talk about this at the very beginning of the conversation? How do you convince people to come together? How do you say you can trust me? How do you say I do represent mm-hmm. everybody? I guess that's maybe a better.
How do you gain the trust? You mean how do you gain the trust?
Yeah, how do you gain trust?
Constituents or potential
maybe
voters? I mean,
scratch the question, Jamal. But I'm just this.
No. I will tell you what has happened on it, because I did talk about the divisiveness and where we are as a nation. And what I will say about a candidate such as Ray, and Ray in specific, since we're talking about him, is he's unbought and unbossed. I gotta borrow Shirley Chisholm.
He is not, although
he would say the unbossed part is not true, because he would say I'm his boss. Right. But really Leo right. is his boss. And more than right. anybody, Ella has him wrapped around her finger. So maybe he's certainly unbought. but that's one thing with Ray. And he's not doing this for a title, for stature. He's not doing this because he's gone through every other elected local office that he can do, and next up, let me run for mayor. he's not doing this because he needs a pension. He's not doing this because of an ego. Like, to be clear, we will be good as a family not doing this, but for we love this city and we don't see any other person running who will do what this city needs. There's no other person that's running that is going to be able to bridge the divide and bring every sector to the table and lead and get deals done and negotiate. When Ray was the corporate head of corporate and investment banking at Citi for 13 years, first of all, no one on Wall Street ever held a position that long, and certainly no Black person ever had that position. Over 13 years in this global position, do you know how many people, and this was the thousands of people, you know how many people left working for him of his direct reports? Mm. Not even direct no. reports, but on his team over 13 years? No. Two people left. Mm. One went to the British government, One went to the CIA. He knows how to attract the best talent and to hold on to the best talent because he is a thoughtful, reasonable person who always allows other people to have their dignity, just as he tries to allow people to for him to have his dignity. So from that perspective, I would like, you know, I would hope people understand that this is somebody who is not a politician, but he is a leader. And he is somebody with integrity and vision and is going to actually be able to attract the brightest, smartest talent to want to come and work in City Hall. He is going to be able to increase public-private partnerships in New York City to cut through the bureaucracy. It takes years and years to get money just to build a community center in a park, in different parts of the community. Because you're like, okay, is this land owned by the city? And is it this zoning? And we need this council person to sign off on this. We need this borough president to sign off on this portion of the budget. When all the while, it's the kids suffering. It's the city suffering. Public-private partnerships. And then we're going to grow our way out of this.
Are you going to document this? Are you going to, is this going to be like Little Ballers 2, but this will be Road to Gracie Mansion? Are you going to document this?
This will be Big Ballers right here, I think.
right. Big Ballers, Shot Callers.
Shot Callers. That's right. Shot Callers, Ballers. Yeah.
Did you all see Ray's launch video?
Well, I was gonna mention that says now that I'm working in your campaign, because I got all these calls from people saying, yeah, man, did you see
yourself? You?
I'm like,
yes, you were in there.
I was in there. So I said, well, I guess now that I'm part of the campaign. So yes, I did.
Oh yeah, yeah, oh yeah. Oh gosh, I'm sorry. That's right. Right. Were you offended by being in it, Bill?
No, first of all, no. But second of all, we have public. No. I mean, I'm thinking, no. I mean, this is great. I mean, who am I going to vote for? Number one, I'm an independent. I vote independently. So I'm
okay. Well, can I tell you something, Bill? Yeah. Can I tell you something on that? Since you brought that up, which is really, really, really important. So this is key for all your listeners. In order to vote for Ray, who is a Democrat, you have to vote in the Democratic primary, and you cannot vote in the Democratic primary unless you are registered as a Democrat.
I know.
New York City has had historically low turnout for its primaries. Mm. So I just want to let you know, I know you are a proud independent. Too.
You know,
I agree.
I agree.
I agree. I agree with you, Bill. But since that is the law right now, I just would like to say that for anyone who wants to vote for Ray in the Democratic primary, which is being held on June 22nd, that you can re-register via a link with the DMV by February 14th. You can re-register your political party as a Democrat to vote for Ray.
You should say that again, because that is important, because I always felt on the outside looking in, you know, when you had these elections and they said, well, you're an independent, and you can't vote, you gotta re-register. And I'm like, well, I'm still paying. I mean, it's not, but anyway, but so how do we do that again?
So if you want to vote in the Democratic primary, you have to be registered as a Democrat. You can re-register through the DMV. I actually am gonna send a link, but there's a link that it literally takes 5 minutes where you can go and change your political party to Democrat, but it must be done by February 14th. Right. And I'm going to send you all, I'm going to text you all the link. It seriously takes like 5 minutes, because we have a lot of friends who are independents, who have re-registered and want to vote, for Ray in the primary. And because the primary is the election,
right?
To be clear,
right.
It is the election. So, Ray of hope.
That's right. That's right. So I will do that. So we've had this candid conversation. I will do that, because I support Ray, and it's good being in the video. I think I made the video. I think my head second. run it back. Run it back. Let's see. You know what? That was
and
done.
Bill,
fact, yeah.
That was at the PSA gala, right?
Yeah, that's
where
the
Ray
last
was
time.
Honored.
That's one of the last time I saw, because Spike was there. You did the nice thing with Charles Oakley.
Mo Bamba was there. Introduced Ray. That was like a reunion.
Yeah, that was like a
mini reunion of this show. A bunch of the little ballers were there.
Yeah. Next time we have you on the show, I want who knows when that's going to be, because you got your bet. How are all the little ballers doing? I mean, you don't have to go purse by purse. I did see at Cole's the thing at Clyde's. I saw a few of them there, right?
So Judah and Bryce, who are in Little Ballers, are actually living with Cole in Orlando, and they have all these little business ventures. So I'm proud of them. Like Bryce has a company, Count Yourself In, that does apparel. Judah has a company, but they're both students. They're both going to be graduating from college soon because they like went to school year round. And so they're doing great. Tyreek. Remember Tyreek?
He had a rough
spell. I mean, he went through a period where he had actually had you know, gotten shot. But recovered from that, and he is now actually a rapper. He is a rapper. Yeah. I'm trying to remember his stage name. I'm gonna have to send you that too. But his music is actually pretty good. But he graduated. He graduated from high school, got his life together, you know, got out of, you know, New York City, had gone, you know, someplace else safe, and is now an undisclosed location.
Not where
Bill is, but he's doing great. And then Billy, you remember Coach Billy? Billy's doing well. I think Billy's about to run for city council in Harlem.
Oh, wow. Oh, good for him.
Yeah, everybody has the public service bug, which on one hand I think is great. You know, I think that people are really caring more about, you know, if we want to make a change, you know, try to run for something. So I'm really proud of Billy. Like, you know, he's a local business owner, a coach, a mentor. So good role model.
Yeah, that's great.
What's next for you, if anything? You know, what else you have going on besides, you might not have anything, it might be all this campaign. But what else do you have going on, just in case?
It's always something. Okay, real quick. I have been working towards a longer form documentary on the Legal Defense Fund. That's one.
My father worked for the Legal Defense Fund. He was a lawyer for the Legal Defense Fund.
Right. Now I remember that. Yeah. I remember we had that conversation. That was our connection, our LDF connection. LDF to me, I stand by it. They're the greatest lawyers out there, the civil rights legal architects of our time. So much respect. For your father. The novel that I co-authored with Tanya Lewis Lee, called Gotham Diaries, we licensed it, and it's going to Lionsgate and Courtney Kemp's production company, who created Power. It's going to be made into a scripted television series.
Okay, great. Wow. Congratulations.
Little Ballers. I just entered a new venture. We're going to do the third iteration of it, which I'll share. I'll come back and share more with you on that. It's more of like a 360-degree deal. I've been working on a documentary with on Ariel Investments out of Chicago, John Rogers and Melody Company.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It started as their 35th anniversary. Now they're going into their 37th year, but I've just been continuing. So lots of, you know, incredibly, you know, interesting stuff. Raising my kids. You know, being a fake momager, because I'm not really a manager or an agent, but I'll just, you know, call myself the fake momager. Just trying to, you know, momager for the kids, momager for Ray. But you know, you say, what do I do? This is how I've sort of lived my life to get anything done. I do whatever is required to complete a project at the highest possible level of success and excellence. And so if I have to do some craft food services, I'm gonna do it. If I have to do some marketing, I'm gonna do it. If I have to write something, I'm gonna do it. But I'm gonna do whatever I can do to meet a goal.
If I could have hired you 15 years ago, I wouldn't be on an undisclosed location. I'd be on Easy Street. That's my mistake. I'm listening to this. I said, I knew I should have hired Chris a long time ago. I made the wrong decision.
Anyway, yeah, and I probably would have. No, you've done all right for yourself, Bill. You've done pretty good. Don't even let me. People only dream. People only dream of having the career that you have had and continue to have as a journalist and a great thinker, and you continue to expand on what you have done. So please.
Yep. Yeah, well,
don't even try that one.
Yeah, well, anyway, but you know what? That's the great thing about being in New York. I tell young people, I said, you know what? Here, because no matter what you got, somebody got more. No matter what you've accomplished, somebody's accomplished more. So at some point, you just say, you know, F it, and let me just be the best I can be, because and go
That's
by
right.
it, you know, because you're at every block, yeah. to every block,
yeah.
you may think you got this. And then
right.
somebody
right.
else. So you know what?
Right. That's right.
Yeah. So, but that's the
right. Don't go. Right. We can't go comparing and looking in other people's backyards, see what they have.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, there's a very thin line.
That don't do it.
No, there's a thin line between being inspired and comparing yourself. That's a very, it's a thin line, because we're always inspiring each other, but you got to make peace.
Right.
You, at some point, you make peace with.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, that will come a segment two of this conversation. We talk about the spirituality of whatever
success.
Politics. Or, yeah. But listen, our guests have been the wonderful Crystal McCrary McGuire. She's an author, a mother. She's a justice warrior. Her husband, Ray McGuire, is running for mayor. Her son, Cole Anthony, could be Rookie of the Year this year. She's got a wonderful daughter, Ella. She's got a son. I just had his name. We just talked about his name. Leo the Lion. Is he a Leo? No. He was named after his grandpa, and not because he's a Leo.
Right. But my daughter's a Leo. I have a Leo, a Taurus, and a Scorpio.
So who's the Taurus?
Cole is a Taurus. No, yeah, Cole is a Taurus.
Oh, Cole is a Scorpio.
What's his birthday? I'm a Taurus.
He is May 15th.
Okay.
Oh, okay. But you're
and
a Leo.
Leo's a Scorpio.
You're a Scorpio.
I'm a Scorpio, and Leo's a Scorpio. Yes.
Oh, what's Ray? Yes.
So.
What's
Ray? Ray is an Aquarius.
Oh.
An Aquarius.
Wow. That's.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
We got a lot going on.
Got a lot going on now.
A whole lot going on.
All right. Hey, Crystal, thank you so much. You're the best. And best of luck on all fronts, on every front. Best of luck. And we're here to support you.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you so much. I so appreciate you all having me on your show. And we gotta come back again with the family.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
All right. All right. Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. All right. Take care.
All right. Take care, you all.
You too.
All right.
Bye.
So there we go. That great interview, you know?
Yes.
Crystal is living what you call a full life.
Very full. Gotta give her a call and get some advice. She's someone to talk to. Yeah, another great episode. Thanks for listening. Continue to follow us and subscribe and listen to the program wherever you listen to your podcasts, and follow us on social media, and hit us up with any questions you may have on social media at BrosPod on Twitter and at BrosPod on Instagram, and Bill Roden on Sports on Facebook.
All right. And everybody, continue to stay safe. Stay upbeat, stay positive. We will see you next week. So God bless and keep the faith.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.